Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC Studios, I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast. It's Friday, March 17th. Now, if you live in New York or New Jersey and receive SNAP benefits, also known as food stamps, the amount of money you're getting to buy food just went down. Why? The federal government had increased the benefit at the beginning of the pandemic, and now it's gone down to pre-pandemic levels. This is another kind of conversation like we were having before about restaurants being able to use the streets temporarily, and that's expiring, and they're figuring out what to do. Well, the same thing has happened with SNAP benefits. Fair enough, in a way, for it to go back down to pre-pandemic benefits, as most pandemic unemployment is gone, but the reduction in money for food comes as the price of food has been going up, as we all know, due to inflation. Food pantries and soup kitchens have been preparing for a spike in demand as a result. The New York State Comptroller's Office has figures that show food insecurity actually went down during the pandemic, but it's expected to rise again now. According to federal government statistics cited on NPR, more than 80% of SNAP beneficiaries are working families, people with disabilities, or elderly people. A source quoted by NPR says the steepest drops will disproportionately hit elderly people. Older adults who qualify for the minimum SNAP benefit will see their amount fall, get this, from $281 a month to just $23 for the month of March with the expiration of the COVID supplement. If you're among those affected, the NPR story reminds us there are other government programs you might qualify for. Children up to the age of 5 and pregnant or postpartum women may qualify for WIC, the Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women, Infants, and Children. Low-income people who are at least 60 years old may qualify for programs targeted at seniors, including the Seniors Farmers Market Nutrition Program. Did you know there's such a thing as that? That provides coupons for fresh produce at farmers markets. We thought we would use this late pandemic turning point in SNAP benefits to take a step back and take a quick walk through the history of the food stamp program and wind up back at the present and alternative approaches to food insecurity. And with me for this is Janet Poppendick, Professor Emerita of Sociology at Hunter College. She has written extensively about hunger, poverty, and food assistance in the U.S. Among her many publications was one just before the pandemic in 2019 called College Students and SNAP, the New Face of Food Insecurity. Professor Poppendick, thanks for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Let's do some history. When and why did the food stamp program begin in the United States?
Okay. Well, it began toward the end of the Great Depression in 1939. There had been a commodity distribution program from 1933, and the economists in the Department of Agriculture were looking for an alternative that would accomplish three things. They still wanted to continue to move surplus foods into the hands of hungry people. So this was a food stamp program that focused on surplus foods. They wanted to create consumer choice. There were a lot of problems with the commodity distribution and people getting stuff they didn't know how to use or wasn't part of their diet, and they wanted to include grocers in the transaction, both for the convenience of the clients and because grocers had been shouldering a lot of the burden of the Depression, and I guess USDA felt they'd earned a right to be included in the transaction. Hmm. So that program ran from 39 to 43. It was terminated during the war. There were virtually no surpluses left, and the need was much reduced.
It's so interesting. Can I follow up on that for just a second? It wasn't just the hunger, the need for food itself, that was enough for the federal government to act. It had to be that a period of high unemployment then coincided with periods of agricultural surplus, and the farmers didn't have anything to do with that. food and they were losing money. Is that right? And is that why the food stamp program wound up in the agriculture department, the government department concerned with the producers of food, not specifically the hungry people?
Absolutely. And it's the origin story for food assistance. You know, in addition to SNAP, we have the programs that you just reminded people were available, and the school meal programs, so it adds up to 15 federal nutrition programs. But the origin story is really an accident in the early years of the New Deal. The Roosevelt administration wanted to forestall a glut on the hog market, and they wanted to pump some money into the hands of Midwestern farmers. And so they put out a thing to buy baby pigs and pregnant sows, and 6 million of them. And it was a public relations disaster. Everything that could go wrong did go wrong. And because the baby pigs couldn't be processed by the equipment for processing food, and they were turning it into something called tankage, which is kind of liquefied pig that gets dried and used for fertilizer. But there wasn't time to dry it all, and the processors dumped it, and the weather turned hot, and great stench arose from quarries and gravel pits where it had been dumped, and anti-Roosevelt newspapers got hold. It was a real, I think of it as Roosevelt's Katrina. It was a public relations disaster, and Roosevelt was smart and savvy, and he directed his Secretary of Agriculture and his Federal Emergency Relief Administrator to create a program. They create a little corporation called the Federal Surplus Relief Corporation to purchase farmer surpluses and distribute them for relief.
That is so fascinating, and history that I personally didn't know. So let's flash forward to the 1960s. Presidents Kennedy and Johnson relaunched the food stamp program. Why them and why then?
Okay. Well, just FYI, there was food stamp legislation introduced into every Congress between the termination in 1943 and the eventual creation of the modern food stamp program in 1963. And that was it had champions because it had worked well. People liked that program. But having said that, why them? Well, President Kennedy, his first two executive orders on his first day in office. One was to increase the number of commodities in the commodity distribution program. He had seen it when he was campaigning in West Virginia and had seen how inadequate it was. And the other was to direct USDA to create a pilot food stamp program. So I think in Kennedy's case, it was a commitment growing out of his experiences on the campaign trail. After his death, Johnson took over pushing for food stamps, and Johnson was, as you know, a very savvy politician with a lot of roots in the farm block, as it was called back then, the agricultural. Agriculture had outsized power in the United States Senate because that was back when chairmanships of committees were based on seniority, longevity, not on party. Mm-hmm. So those Southern Democrats that got elected, you know, for generations, as it seemed, ran a lot of the important committees whose cooperation Johnson knew he needed. And his Secretary of Agriculture, Orville Freeman, looked at the changing demographics and realized that in the House of Representatives, there were fewer and fewer and fewer members from farm-dominated districts. Farming was, you know, farms were consolidating. People were going out of the farming business as big corporations took over. And there were fewer and fewer districts that could be seen as reliably pro-farm. And Freeman advised that farmers are not going to be able to get their subsidies through unless they had something to trade with more urban representatives. Uh-huh. And that's how it happened.
So again, it was the interest of the farmers meet the interest of low-income people in the cities, therefore food stamp program. So let me make a quick stop in the 1980s before we get to the present and ask you about backlash against the food stamp program. I'm thinking of the Reagan anti-government assistance era of the 80s, his descriptions of so-called welfare queens getting over on the taxpayers. And that was followed pretty much back-to-back by the Gingrich Congress anti-government assistance period when Bill Clinton was president and they overhauled welfare as they knew it at that time. Did new limitations or requirements get placed on food stamps at that time as well?
Yes, absolutely. In the beginning of the Reagan era, we had the Omnibus Budget Reconciliation Act of 81 and 82, OBRA, and they made all kinds of cuts. Most of them relatively small, but cumulatively made it harder for people to apply, restricted eligibility in various ways and benefits. Generally speaking, the anti-food stamp or the effort to control food stamp has three claims. One is that they cost too much. The second is that they create work disincentives. And the third is that recipients don't use them widely, that they spend them all on cookies and soft drinks. And these are recurring tropes that we hear again and again. In the Clinton situation with the, 1994, the Contract with America, Gingrich and his crew came in and they wanted to block grant the food stamp program. And advocates get real nervous as soon as the term block grant comes up because that ends the entitlement status. One of the great achievements of the work in the 1970s was that food stamps are an entitlement. If you are eligible and you're denied, you can take it to court. And there's a thing called a fair hearing, but you have a legally enforceable right to the program if you're eligible. And Congress has to use a kind of performance funding so that if the program runs out of exceeds its budget, they need to appropriate more unless they're going to have special legislation that introduces a cap. And block granting ends that. So block granting, as we've seen with what used to be welfare and now TANF, gives each state a fixed amount, and when they've run out of it, they've run out of it. And then it gives them a lot of discretion on how to use it so that with what used to be welfare, they use very, very little of it for cash assistance to poor people. So food stamps were threatened with this, and once again, it was the agriculture committees that kept that from happening, which is that relationship with agriculture has been a two-edged sword all along.
Let's hear what's happening with some of our listeners right now as the boost in the pandemic era food stamp program, SNAP benefit program, has expired this month. Emma in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Emma.
Hi. I'm on food stamps, and I started them during the pandemic. And my benefits are going down. And I just wanted to say that they're not putting this in context, this demotion of benefits in context at all. Rents are so high right now, higher than they were during the pandemic. Inflation is so high. And it honestly, what you had said before, it doesn't surprise me at all that food insecurity went down during the pandemic. I mean, there was a huge mobilization that I was a part of doing food pantries and stuff. But it makes it, they don't care about solving food insecurity if we're not learning from the things that worked. I mean, if it went down, why put our benefits down?
Yeah, and same thing with the child tax credit, right? That actually reduced child poverty during the pandemic, and Congress, particularly the Republicans in Congress, let that expire. Emma, thank you for weighing in. Professor Papendick, was the SNAP program ever tied to inflation? Because that could keep the benefits higher. You know, we talk about Social Security tied to inflation, and because of inflation, Social Security recipients got something like an 8% boost in their benefits this year. How about food stamps or SNAP?
Okay. So SNAP is indeed tied to inflation and has been pretty much since the outset of the modern program. But here's the problem. They take the June Consumer Price Index for the cost of foods consumed at home. There's one for food you prepare at home, and there's a different one for food you eat out. And for the last year, in 2022, the CPI for foods consumed at home went up 11.4%. So that's almost a percent a month on average. Okay, so they take the June figure and they use it to calculate the benefits that will begin October 1st when the federal fiscal year begins. So that means it's already 3 months out of date when they start using it. By the end, when they're ready for the next calculation, it's 16 months out of date. So I am waging what feels to me like a one-woman campaign, although there are probably other people out there working on this, to get them to go back to the way it was before those OBRA cuts in 1981, to doing it at least semi-annually. I actually think we could have a system where if food price inflation reaches a certain threshold, let's say, 2% over 3 months or something like that, that we do a readjustment. Because, it's not as hard as it used to be with all the digital technology. But at least go back to doing it twice a year.
Eileen in Babylon, you're on WNYC. Hi, Eileen.
Hi, thank you for taking this call. I'm a caregiver for my disabled brother, and we just started this month the first time with food stamps, and we're able to shop down fresh grocery aisle that we never did before. And I'm just wondering if this is going to be affected. The regular, I don't think it has anything to do with the pandemic, but is that also going to be affected? It's $200 a month.
Professor, do you know exactly what she's referring to?
Well, there is a nutrition incentive program, and that's still in place. So you may get some extra bucks that you can use for fresh produce. And there's a similar thing at the farmer's market. But if you just started, the benefit you got, if you started in March, the benefit he's getting would be the smaller benefit. It would not have the pandemic enhancement that it had. So you won't be losing anything more.
Eileen, I hope that's helpful. Thank you very much. Well, as we begin to run out of time, I mentioned the NPR story before, which said the steepest drops in the SNAP benefit dollar amount will disproportionately hit elderly people. Older adults who qualify for the minimum SNAP benefit will see their amount fall from $281 to just $23 this month. That is really steep. Do you understand the formula that results in a drop like that?
Yeah. Let me see if I can read. The minimum benefit is the benefit you get if your income approaches the eligibility level. And a lot of seniors, because of Social Security, have not enough income to fully get by, but they're close to the cutoff level. And, they could continue to calculate the benefits right down till they get down to $2 or what have you. But years ago, they decided, okay, let's set a minimum benefit. And currently, the minimum benefit is at $23. Okay. During the pandemic, the way in which they infused SNAP dollars into the economy, and I need to point out that it's not just recipients who benefit from SNAP dollars. It's grocery store workers and people who transport food to groceries and, the whole local economy benefits from an infusion of federal dollars. But anyway, the way they infused those dollars, there was an overall 15% increase, which has already been eliminated. And then there was a provision that allowed the benefits for all participants to rise to the level of the maximum benefit for their family size. So if you were in a family of four and you had been getting, $300 a month, it rose to, I'm sorry, I don't have numbers in front of me, but everybody got the top benefit as if they had had zero income.
I see.
So
and now
for
it goes
a lot
back
of seniors.
The, yes,
right.
For a lot of seniors. Go ahead and finish the thought.
So for a lot of seniors, it went from 23 to 281 because that's the maximum for a single individual.
We just have a minute left. We could do a whole show on this question I'm about to ask you. But for you as a longtime student of and expert on food insecurity, Do you think SNAP is the best way to address it? Are there other ways, some kind of universal guaranteed food basket, like people propose a guaranteed minimum income, or any other model?
Okay. I don't think there's a better food-specific way to do it. I think a guaranteed, and we need an incomes policy in the United States. We need much higher wages, and we need income guarantees for, you know, the various things that interrupt our income, a pandemic, all the climate-related disasters, and the things that happen to individuals. So a guaranteed income strategy I would favor, but a guaranteed food basket. Remember I said what they wanted back in 1939 was consumer choice, yeah, and letting people use the normal channels of trade, the grocery stores and what have you.
Yeah.
I think that's important. It's important for people who are in need to be part of our society. And you know, there are people out there in your audience who have the imagination that people go on SNAP and stay on it for generations or for the rest of their life. But that's not the common pattern. The common pattern is for people to be on SNAP for a period of months up to a couple of years at a point when, you know, their income is not meeting their needs and grow out of it. And so it's there to help people when they need it most. This tends to be when they are caring for young children, which inhibits their ability to get decent jobs in the workforce and imposes a lot of expenses. So and I think SNAP is fundamentally a very good program that needs to be modernized.
And as we said at the beginning, there are other things as well that people can apply for if their SNAP benefits are dwindling past the point of them being able to afford enough food now with these post-pandemic boost cuts. There's, you know, we could have a whole other conversation about universal free school lunch. And
we certainly could.
Maybe we will do that.
Which we have in New York City.
Yes, absolutely. Well, we leave it there with Janet Poppendick, Professor Emerita of Sociology at Hunter College. She has written extensively about hunger, poverty, and food assistance in the United States. Thank you so much for joining us today. Really interesting.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.